again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 133. We talk all things Orlando City and Orlando Pride. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Joining me, as always, is my co-host and fellow writer at the Mainland, David Rowe, up in Tallahassee. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. As wonderful as we can be after the weekend. I mean, we had some good, we had some bad, we had a debut of a new coach. There's so much to talk about.
Nine is the number now, Dave. The magic number of consecutive losses is nine, as Orlando City chases down MLS history and the all-time record, which I believe is 12 consecutive losses. It is well within reach. So, hey,
woo-hoo!
Good job,
Wait,
Lions.
Oh, that's a bad thing.
Lions,
sorry.
Chasing history. So there you go. Yeah, the James O'Connor debut happened Saturday at LAFC as the new head coach of Orlando City. And I have to say that even though the loss was, again, lopsided, a 4-1 LA victory, I think that there were a lot of positives in this game that you could take away. Of course, you never want a moral victory. You never, you know, a loss is a loss and they all suck equally. But it looked more like to me, Dave, the first couple losses in this losing streak where the team played well, but kind of had some bad moments, played well overall, probably generated enough chances to win the game or at least to take something from the game, and didn't finish those chances. So maybe not quite the same as the other recent lopsided losses at Atlanta and the two games against Montreal.
No, there was a different feel about it. And that could just be because, you know, we're looking at it with different eyes because, you know, we've got a new coach. We're looking at things differently, but it did feel different to me. Yes, it's a loss and a loss sucks. Yeah. But at the same time, there was a different vibe to the team in this game, and I don't know if it's just the, all of them trying to prove that they belong or what, but up until Specs went out, you felt a little bit better.
Yeah, an interesting lineup. We saw Coleman on the left side and Mueller on the right, with Kleshton in the middle, Dwyer up top, defensive midfielders Yoshi and Yuri. And the back line was a little bit different. We saw Tarek and Spectre, who you would expect as the healthy center backs at the time. More on that later. And then the right back, since Scott Sutter was out with an adductor injury, was R.J. Allen. So it's kind of default there. Also, Will Johnson was suspended for yellow card accumulation. And then Donny Toya getting back in the lineup on the left side. So it looked like James O'Connor wanted to play a more defense-oriented game where the goal was to stay in the game and to be organized and that kind of thing. And it did work for a while. LAFC does score a lot of early goals, especially at home. And, you know,
typically in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, they talked a lot about that on the broadcast, about how often they score in the first 15 minutes. Orlando City weathered that and plus another 13. It was 28 minutes before the first goal was scored, and that was kind of off a scramble. But before that happened, the old injury bug bit again. Spectre comes up with a hammy and had to be replaced by Chris Schuler. And that was in the 25th minute, and just 3 minutes later, LA scored the first goal. And that was I think that there was a moment in there where Joe Bendick could have calmed that sort of chaos down, but it looked like he picked up a shot. I think it was from Kay a little late. Or no, it was from Blessing. I'm sorry. Blessing got a shot in. It didn't seem like it was that troublesome, but I don't know if he was late picking it up or whatever, but he went down and he punched it out. Didn't really get a good clearance on it. Blessing was able to track it down and recycle it in, and Diamande ends up with the goal. I thought that he could have done a little better there, but, it happened and you conceded the 28th minute. And I liked the response to that because, you know, it was the 31st minute that Kleshton played in Dom Dwyer behind the back line and had a golden opportunity to tie the game right away. But Tyler Miller with a big save, Dom doesn't get his shot around the big keeper. And unfortunately, a minute later, it was 2-0.
Orlando City making other teams' goalkeepers look like badasses all year.
Yeah, well, Miller is actually having a pretty good year, and he made some really good saves in this game. Unfortunately. But it was 2-0 at the half, and, you know, it seemed like in the lead-up, before the goal even, it seemed like Orlando had a plan. They're content to give up possession. Their intent to, you know, their intention was to stay organized, look for opportunities to counter. This is not a team that we've seen a lot of counterattacking from this year. But I think, Dave, they actually looked like they were somewhat capable looking on the counterattack in this game. And they always seemed like, you know, there was going to come a moment where one of them would connect with Dwyer and spring him, or somebody else was going to come in and join the play with Dwyer holding the play up and bringing in a Chris Mueller or somebody like that. And in fact, early in the game, Chris Mueller was very active out on the right side, and it kind of he kind of disappeared after the early going, and then the attack started to run more up the left side. But I did like the opportunist sort of approach to the game, where here's a team that is a high-scoring team. We're not going to pretend that we're going to just hold on to the ball and keep them from having it. We're going to stay organized, and we're going to wait, and we're going to make them make a mistake, and we're going to look for opportunities to get transition goals. And I thought that was a decent approach, and certainly a different one than we've seen.
I was going to say it was obviously a different approach than we've seen. You can already see James O'Connor's stamp on this team as far as the tactics. I think it was an interesting lineup. I believe that, you know, James has come in, he's got all of these guys and, you know, we're talking about, he's had him for 5 days. So,
right.
You know, he can only do so much, you know, figuring out who's going to do what. And so it's kind of like, you know, Donnie Toya makes, you know, the starting lineup. And so, Donnie must have showed him something in practice, because I don't think that, O'Connor has any kind of loyalty to Donnie Toya. So whatever he showed him in practice must have been, you know, what got him onto the field. They did look a little bit more dangerous. They were absorbing the pressure more than most teams have against LAFC this year so far. So, I mean, that's a positive. And it wasn't until, you know, Specs went out that, you know, things fell apart a little bit, which, okay, you take your captain and your most experienced center back out of the game. Well, of course that's going to affect things. You would be nuts to think that it wasn't. And not anything against Chris Schuller. I mean, I think he actually did a decent job once he came in. I mean, he's a big dude. You know, he's no Jonathan Spector, but still, you know, did a decent job. And you're right. The attack was a counterattacking plan, which is exactly what you need to do on somebody with like LAFC. I mean, they're going to press high. So the way to play them is to do that, and that's what Orlando City tried to do. And ultimately, you know, they did end up getting a goal from that.
Yeah, it was an interesting situation. I'm certain that you know, James O'Connor, being a very hardworking guy, has probably watched a lot of film prior to that first game, and you know, maybe he just saw, you know, that Mohamed El-Munir is a little bit loose with the ball sometimes, a little bit taking chances, getting caught upfield. Maybe he just wanted to go with somebody a little bit more stay at home, a little more defensively responsible on that left side, and maybe that's why Toya got the start. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but if you're running that type of a you know, strategy, probably that's a good move. And then you've got the ability to bring El-Munir in off the bench if you need offense, which they did later in the game as a midfielder, actually a wing player,
which was really interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, 2-0 at the break, and I didn't think Schuller played particularly poorly. I think that we just saw a perfect example, really, of why you don't ever like to substitute a center back in the middle of the game. It took a few minutes for the back line to sort of reset. You know, it was a 7-minute span from the time that Spector left the field to the two goals having scored for LAFC. So just some simple rotations that they can clean up. It's And probably if Schuler was in the rhythm of the game, maybe guys aren't being pulled out of position and rotate and failing to rotate and that kind of thing. So it's hard to say that if Spector doesn't get hurt, they still don't score those two goals, but I think it was probably less likely.
Certainly.
But it was nice because Toya got an assist in the game because he sent Sasha Kljestan in on a break, and of course it was helped some by Walker Zimmerman coming out to try to get there and going down, and Kljestan rounded him and was able to score from the top of the box and make it 2-1. And it was sort of game on a little bit. It was like, okay, you started to see Orlando getting a little bit more of the ball, get a little bit more confidence. And then in the 72nd minute, Orlando ties the game.
Woohoo!
But no.
Oh.
In what is just yet another inexplicable decision, it really looked at first like a brilliant play. Because the ball gets played in behind to Justin Meram, or it gets played in behind the back line, and Dom Dwyer is a mile offside. But he doesn't, he ignores the ball, runs away from it, and allows it to run through, and Justin Meram gets on it, and now you're like, oh, well, here we go. And then Meram cuts the ball back to a now completely onside Dom Dwyer, who scores. It's 2-2. The teams come all the way back from two goals down. It's only 18 minutes to play to get a point on the road. Maybe LA is going to be on their back foot a little bit, maybe feeling the pressure being the home team and having blown the two goal lead. But no, there's this big long delay before the restart. The video assistant referee has decided that Chris Penso, the on-field referee or the AR on the side, who did not raise his flag, has made a clear and obvious error. Which means he's saying, Dave, that you can clearly see that Justin Meram is offside, clearly offside, and the goal does not count. I've seen the replays that are available. I have looked at them a number of times. I've seen the still photographs of when Kljestan unleashes the pass. I do not see any clear and obvious error by Chris Penso on that play.
I know that we're both older and maybe our eyes aren't that good, but my close-up vision, if my contacts are out, is perfectly fine. And I've looked at those same videos, and I don't see anything clear and obvious either.
You
As
cannot,
far as I'm concerned, he was onside.
you just cannot look at that play and say that there, with any certainty, that you can see a clear offside on that play when the ball is passed. And hilariously, MLS put out a You Decide video and they spot shadow Miram when the ball is halfway to him. And of course, he's beyond the last defender because he has now run past that last defender because it's called making a run. And
Right, because the ball had already been
yeah,
hit.
the ball had been hit and was, anywhere from a half to three quarters of the distance it traveled to where he got it, and now they spot shadow him. It was a ridiculous sort of way to try to cover for the referee and say that he made the right call. And what really was bothersome is that, at that point, Penso, earlier in the year or even late last year after they started to introduce video review, all plays were reviewed by the on-field referee. He would run over to the side, look at the monitor and say, yep, I screwed that up, or nope, got it right,
Correct.
or, close enough, not an obvious error. So the play on the field counted. Now they don't have to do that for offside calls. Now the VAR has the authority to make that call. So Chris Penso previously would have gone over and looked at it, and maybe he sees something we don't see and says offside. But probably the likely cause is like, yeah, that's so close. I can't really tell for sure, so I have to make the call on the field stand. But anyway, you look at it. Just a huge deflating thing to take away the goal, and now it's 2-1 again. Still time, but that's a pretty big momentum killer, especially when you've already celebrated the goal and everybody's feeling great, and then it gets pulled back like that that late. It was
All right, I
just
have to
abuse of the
interrupt.
system. Abuse of the system.
I was going to say, I have to interrupt and say that was BS.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use the letters instead of the word, but that was BS.
Yeah. And then, so the game goes on, and in the 82nd minute, Diamande off a goal line scramble off of a corner kick, puts the ball off the crossbar. Penso calls it a goal. We restart immediately. There's no lengthy delay to see, did the ball completely cross the line? I couldn't tell from the angles they showed on television. It wasn't clear.
Wait, what?
It wasn't clear to me. Maybe they have some funky, overhead shot that we're not privy to on the broadcast that the VAR looked at, and he looked at it so quick you couldn't even tell that he looked at it. But they immediately just took the ball out the center circle and kicked off. There was no, I didn't see Chris Penso go to his earpiece and, you see when they're consulting with the VAR. And
I know what happened.
You do.
I do. He did go to the earpiece. It just wasn't shown on TV, and it was Don Garber going, yeah, just keep going.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, we've joked the pro gonna pro, but come on, man. I mean, this is not the kind of thing that would ever happen to the darling teams of the league, including LAFC. But this happens routinely to Orlando, and you continue to say, well, it's just, people around the league say, oh, Orlando fans are whining about the officials because their team is bad. No, we're whining about the officials because the officials are bad.
Yeah, there's the pro gonna pro is a thing because pro gonna pro. We didn't start that because we were whiners. We started that because of calls that are made consistently. And I'm certain that we could, and maybe this is an article for somebody to write, to go back and find every instance of this to show that we're not just being petty.
I mean, if you want to say that there are games that Orlando City has won or tied that they didn't deserve to because of a call, you might have two in the 4 years, maybe. If you want to say the team potentially dropped points because of a call, you've got a smorgasbord. Belly up to the bar, folks, because there's plenty to choose from. You got
it's all you can eat.
You got handballs that hit chests. You've got unintentional handballs that were called intentional handballs. You've got all kinds of things. You've got red cards that weren't red cards that were later rescinded. Any number of things that have gone against Orlando. I don't know who in Orlando's front office has pissed off the MLS front office, but I really wish that they would become friends. Maybe send them a fruit basket or something. Get this over with. Anyway, LAFC tacked on another one 2 minutes later on just a horrible, horrible touch by Amro Tarek. Just a routine back pass from Justin Merrim, who again gets blasted on Twitter. And it's like, okay, you get mad when he takes on defenders and can't beat them. And you get mad when he's cut off and he makes a back pass. It's a routine back pass that Tarek can't handle for some reason. Takes a huge, heavy touch off of it. Then gets muscled off the ball by Diamande. And, Blessing comes in, picks it up, and feeds over to Diego Rossi for an easy goal. And the game is completely over. And it's a 4-1 scoreline that didn't seem like a 4-1 game. I mean, shots were 19-14. Not totally lopsided in favor of LA. Shots on goal, 13-9. When's the last time, Dave, Orlando City had 9 shots that are on target?
Yeah, right. On goal.
Yeah. That might eclipse the last 3 games.
Ago.
that might eclipse the last 3 games combined, maybe even the last 4 if you don't count the US Open Cup game. So
indeed.
It's unbelievable, but it is another loss, and I think that you could say overall the team played better. Tyler Miller made, a couple of great saves. He made a save on a Sasha Kljestan free kick that was headed for the upper 90 that most goalkeepers would not have gotten. Somebody of Tyler Miller's size and length can make that save, but most of the goalkeepers in this league would not have gotten to that. But 8 saves for Tyler Miller, so they worked him. It's not like he wasn't a busy goalkeeper. There were opportunities there. Didn't finish them, and really some timely finishes earlier in the game might have made that a different game. Certainly, tying the game with 18 minutes to play may have changed the outcome of the game. At least, maybe they park the bus and get the draw. Maybe LA makes a mistake trying to get it back really quick and we're able to counter. That's the thing. The thing about that call is you can look at the 4-1 scoreline and say the call doesn't matter. But as we've said any number of times, the situation of a goal completely changes the complexion of a game. So there's no telling what would have happened.
Right. I mean, if that call happens when it's 3-1, okay, sure, maybe you're right. But when it's 2-1 versus 2-2, It matters. It absolutely matters. Momentum is a thing in sports. How players feel, how the opponents feel. All of this is a true thing in sports. It you can see it in anything: basketball, football, baseball, whatever you like. Certainly soccer. So the mentality changes on both sides. So like you said, maybe we park the bus. Maybe they have to advance more. Maybe we have confidence. Regardless, obviously, it did obviously change the game. And, the end result, the end result was the end result. I'm going to go back to what I said initially, which was that despite everything, this did feel different. And the mentality of the players felt different. And I'm not saying it's where it needs to be, but it definitely did feel
different.
I was trying for another word. I'm a writer. I should be able to come
up
with another
word. Go find your thesaurus.
Well, all I was going to say is, everybody was more. How about this? Everybody was a little bit more like Mueller in that they kept trying.
Well, and I was gonna jump in and say that the energy of the team seemed different, and it may have just have been the new coach in the first game and trying to impress him, but there did seem to be a renewed energy on the side. I think that the team played better than what the result, certainly the final scoreline, indicated. There were opportunities there. Again, Dwyer had a chance to tie the game at one. It was a big save. Probably could have been a better shot. You had Kleshchen getting robbed on a free kick. You had Josue Coleman got robbed on a nice shot that was labeled for the corner, lower corner, that Miller made a nice save on. You had Mueller miss the net from a tight angle, but the net was empty, and he just completely missed the net. If he puts that on frame, any number of those chances could have changed the outcome. But the fact that they got as many shots and as many shots on goal as they did was a big, big change from what we've seen.
Well, and use the word energy. I use the word Mueller. They made the same thing.
All right. So, Dave, who's your man of the match in the 4-1 loss to L.A.? By the way, the Lions have never won in the state of California.
Well, we're going to have to change that at some point, aren't we? I'm going to give my man of the match to Sasha. Because he scored a goal, and we haven't scored a goal in I don't even know freaking how long. So it was a long dang time. So for scoring a goal, he gets my man of the match.
Yeah, I agree that Sasha Kleshchen was man of the match. Not only did he score the goal, he set up Dwyer for that opportunity to make it 1-1. And although Dom didn't turn that into an assist for Kleshchen, it should have been. He should have gotten a hockey assist on the Dom Dwyer goal that should have counted. So he could have had a goal and two assist night very easily. The free kick was a superb free kick and would have scored on many nights. But Tyler Miller made a good save. He picked it up early, read the play well, and made the save. So Kleshchen was the most dangerous player for Orlando City. He was the best all-around player, I think, over the course of the 90 minutes. So I think that's a solid choice. Man of the match, Sasha Kleshchen. Okay. Well, we move on. We move on to the Toronto FC. The Reds come to Orlando City Stadium Saturday night, 8 o'clock start time, which is a little bit different. Usually the home games are 7:30. Maybe it's a Canadian TV thing or something. Maybe they requested 8 o'clock. But,
sure it is, eh?
I don't know. I'm getting – I think it's a little past most people's bedtimes. The 11 o'clock start time the other night was certainly
– that was way past everybody's bedtime.
Grueling. By the time I wrote the recap and edited all the stories, it was 3 in the morning. I was pretty dead. It was pretty dead. But yeah, so we'll talk a little bit more about Toronto coming up. James O'Connor's second match in charge, and hopefully he'll pick up some points for the first time. Because as of right now, only two coaches have ever won a game or earned any point. Only two coaches have won a game for Orlando City, and that is Adrian Heath and Jason Kreis. Bobby Murphy has earned a point or a few points with draws. So
all the love for you, Bobby, all the love.
All right. So before we get to the pride, a couple of other notes about Orlando City, or at least prior Orlando City folks. We have CJ Brown, former assistant coach, was hired as a New York Red Bull's assistant coach. So the former Jason Kreis assistant is now assisting Chris Armas at New York Red Bulls. Good for CJ. Good for
Absolutely. Congrats.
They're playing well, although they lost the New York Derby, the first game that Chris Armas was coaching. But it was, again, it was on the baseball diamond, which, again, it's so hard to watch games on that field. I watched that game, and I just thought, oh, this game is ruined by this pitch, because
Game is ruined by that pitch.
All these athletes, and they can't get out and do what they do because there's just no space. It's really bad.
It's the worst. It is literally the worst.
Yeah, it's bad. Also, Antonio Nocerino, Dave, is going to Serie B.
Noche!
Yeah, Nocerino not hanging him up. He is signed with Benevento Calcio in Serie B. So, yeah, good for the former midfielder for Orlando City. And, you know, Carlos Rivas, the Red Bulls moved on from him. They've loaned him out. He's gone back to his native Colombia. And go figure. Got to work on consistency. Who would have known that Carlos Rivas was inconsistent?
Okay, so those of you who read my Lion Links this week, this is the joke the second time. But everybody in Colombia, duck.
Duck and cover. All right, so let's get into this. The Pride played a game, Dave, against the Washington Spirit, and it looked like the Lions have rubbed off on the Pride, because chance after chance after chance,
yep,
sent wide, sent right into the keeper, trying to score near post when the keeper was standing right at the near post. Just so many opportunities to score, and it looked like another one of those games where the Pride were going to dominate and still somehow lose like they did against Houston not too long ago. But, you know, and Washington scores off of a set piece because people don't like to cover the posts on set pieces for some reason. I will never understand this. Yes, you give up a defender in a 1v1 situation, but if somebody gets ahead on the ball, a weak header to the back post is an easy goal if nobody's there to just kick it away. And that's what happened.
And not just in the NWSL, but MLS, World Cup.
Oh, yeah, we've seen it in the
EPL,
World Cup.
Everywhere. We see it everywhere again and again and again. And every time it happens, you go, why wasn't there somebody on the back post? Why wasn't there somebody on the front post?
Exactly. And in this case, it was a back post shot from the back post, if that makes sense, because the corner came in and it was sent to the back post area, but it was headed back toward the front post. And nobody was there to keep it out, and including Ashlyn Harris and any defender. So it was 1-0 to the Spirit, even though it was completely against the run of play, completely out of nowhere. And you went, yeah, seems about right. Seems about right for the way things are going, because the Pride had lost their last two home games. And then they got one back right at the death of halftime. You know, good play by Alana Kennedy to get it to Sid. Sid makes another cut, turns and fires near side, and it gets through. It squirts through. A shot that really Aubrey Bledsoe should have stopped, in my opinion. But
if Aubrey had been at Orlando Pride, she would have stopped that one.
That's right. So Sydney had been going near post the whole half. Had she gone far post, she might have had a hat trick in the first half.
Yeah, indeed.
No. So it was 1-1 at the half, and then the second half again. You know, Orlando played well. They were getting chances. They were getting shots. Just Bledsoe made a couple fine saves. They hit the crossbar on Alana Kennedy header. Again, it's just not going. Don't you want to go to your home? It's totally Happy Gilmore.
It's so Happy Gilmore. Go to your home.
Just yeah. Are you too good for your home? And finally, just an outlet late in the game, 86th minute, Sydney finds Marta, who makes a long run, and she's gassed. She's been out there, Dave, the whole game. You know, her legs are not the youngest ones on the pitch. She gets the ball in the box. She cuts to her right. Looks like she's got a chance to shoot. She doesn't shoot. She cuts it back to her left, and she almost falls down because her legs just won't hold her up. And then she just freaking drills one into the upper corner and makes it 2-1 and lifts the Pride to victory.
Okay, so if you need a goal, and you need a goal late, you look to the greatest of all time. And we have her, and that's Marta. And like you said, she was, oh my God, so tired. And yet still made the defense look a little bit silly, two on one, and put the ball at the only place it could have gone. Because let's face it, Bledsoe is an excellent goaltender. We know that. We had her. We had to let her go because she was so good. And yet just put it perfectly, and it goes in. And then the celebration was awesome. I mean, I want to make it my screensaver.
She earned a goal. She earned several. I mean, Bledsoe's best save was earlier in the game.
Yeah.
In fact, that was up for NWSL Save of the Week. It didn't win, but it was one of the finalists. And by the way, Marta's goal of the week in the NWSL. It was a fun trip. So, because of the moves, the placement, and the moment. It was a game winner late. And so crazy. 11 shots, Dave. Sometimes the Pride have gone a whole game without 11 shots. Marta had 11 herself with five of them.
Yeah.
I think the team ended up with 31 shots. It was just laughably lopsided in terms of the way the game was played. But the finishing just wasn't there. And we've seen it with the Lions all year, you know, especially the first few games of this this streak. And we've seen it. We even saw it at Saturday night at L.A. You got to.
Absolutely. And give it up. Of course. But, you know, I mean, give it up with Bledsoe for a couple good saves. And but you're right. I mean, you know, crossbars and near misses. And it fortunately, the Pride are good enough that they were able to overcome that Orlando City thing where they can't win the game because of those things. And like I said, you know, Marta takes it on her shoulders and simply says, okay, I'm going to do this. And I think I read something where she even said, I imagined that I was 20 years old again, not the age I am. And what would I do? And I would do this. And then she went and did it. And while credit, she didn't have anything much after that. Who cares? She scored the goal.
Yeah. That second cutback was really scary for me because it did. She definitely stumbled, and it looked like maybe she doesn't even get a shot off after
right.
passing up a right-footed opportunity, which looked like a golden opportunity. I mean, she had space, had beaten her defender. Bledsoe was on the near post. She had a lot of the far side to shoot at, and she decided to cut back toward the near post. And I thought, oh man, the chance just went again, and she just wouldn't be denied. She just said, I'm going to place this. I'm going to put power on it. I'm going to put it high. And she did. Bledsoe couldn't keep it out. And it's a win for the Pride, Dave. And it was a much needed win because now the team goes on the road to play Houston and Utah in just a, you know, Houston Wednesday night as the same day that this particular podcast drops. And it's an 8:30 start time. And then they'll go out to play Utah at 7 o'clock Eastern time. On Saturday. So a big week for the Pride on the road. Marta easily my man of the our player of the match for the Pride.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, the goal that won it, goal of the week, not to mention just everything else she did in the game. And then, you know, like you said, there were so many chances that just weren't, and she made the most of the one that shouldn't have been and made it happen. I think that it gave that goal kind of was a little bit of a you know resuscitation to the rest of the team. The oh yeah, hey, we're good, we can win, and I think that bodes well going into the next couple games because they needed that. They needed that win. They need you know a result would have been nice, but to get the 3 points, I think that was something that they as a team will be able to take and then as a team build upon. And Marta gave them that.
Well, we will see if they can build on it with a little bit of revenge game against the Houston Dash, another team that the team that just last week came to Orlando and got a victory on a night that, quite frankly, for the first half hour, they should have been down three or four goals. And, you know, because it was a lot like that Washington game in a lot of ways. But they hung around, hung in there, only gave up one, and they were able to come back and win it 2-1. So hopefully, and again, that was a crazy game because they got that cross that somehow went in instead of being across, and then they got the penalty.
Yep.
So, yeah, hopefully a little bit of revenge for the Pride on Wednesday, and then go out and try to get the first win against Utah, which I think Utah now the only team, I think, in the league that Orlando hasn't beaten, because they are a first-year team and they've tied twice. A difficult place to play in Rio Tinto, a good Utah team, but these games now, what are they, 8 games left? Lots of big playoff ramifications every game now.
Yep.
So the good news is that this road trip will pretty much be most of the remainder of the road games for the Pride. The Pride are going to be home a lot more because of the front-loaded schedule with road games. So we'll see. Can they get on a roll? That would be nice, because this is a team that if the goals start going in for this team, they could role play. They could roll some teams, like we did see that against Chicago. On the road. So, and the team's been good on the road this year, so there's reason to be optimistic, and we'll see what happens. Well, you know, we're now in the midst between games 1 and 2 of the James O'Connor era, and as you and I both mentioned, we thought the team looked a little more energetic, a little better in that game out at LA. Maybe getting them at home is what James O'Connor needs to get off the schneid. You know, the team brought in he brought in Daniel Bird with him as an assistant, and Tamani Sutu, goalkeeper coach. I think that was announced this week officially. And yep. Bird was officially announced since our last broadcast as well, although it was already, you know, poorly kept secret. I mean, he was at the introductory press conference for James O'Connor, and it had been reported by Louisville City that he was going as well. So, you know, it was not a surprise, but the new coaching staff is intact. We'll see if they have what it takes to get this thing turned around. It's going to be a process, because this is the first time for all of these coaches to coach MLS, you know, at the MLS level. And it's going to take some time to get everybody on the same page and pulling the same direction. So, you know, I think that that's something that has begun. It looks like it. Hopefully that wasn't just a mirage or, you know, like fool's gold, because it did seem like the team had a different energy about it. It did seem like there were new ideas that were being presented, new players in new positions, like El Munir playing as a midfielder, which is, I think, a good spot for him out on the wing.
Incredibly interesting.
And, you know, It will be crazy. It's just going to be a crazy ride from here on out. But why don't we find out a little bit more about this coaching staff and how it operates? We're going to do that with our special guest right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast, we are very happy to have with us a brand new assistant coach for Orlando City SC, Daniel Bird. Daniel, thanks for being on the podcast.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
So I want to start out by asking you about just sort of the return, because you were here involved in the youth system and you went off to become an assistant under James O'Connor in the USL, a very successful USL program, Louisville City. And then James gets the call here, and you are his right-hand man. He brings you right along with him. What was that like for you to return as an MLS assistant coach?
Exciting. Very exciting. I knew James starting all the way back in 2013. I was coaching in the academy. James was just transitioning into coaching. He was doing some, I think he was actually player coach at the time, and we met. I was actually working in his camps. He had a small business. He was doing some camps connected with the club, and I was doing some coaching in his camps along with coaching in the academy. And we met up, headed off, and he asked me to come to Louisville, and the rest is history.
Now, you say the rest is history, but you guys made quite a bit of history in the USL at Louisville. What was that like, building that program, you know, with him? Tell us something that we don't know, or we can't, you know, go out and read on the internet.
Well, it was tough. We did not know each other. One of the things that James wanted in an assistant was somebody that he didn't know. He wanted an unfamiliar relationship because he wanted it to be strictly that, a working relationship. And so we built not only our friendship from the ground up, but we also built a very, yeah, as you say, effective relationship. Something that lots of people don't know about, or people don't know. Let's just say I kind of make fun of his chosen attire between the two of us. I kind of let him know sometimes about his sun blocking hats and well, when he first moved to Louisville, he wore a face mask as well, like a cover, and you know, I was just as surprised as some of the other people that were working with them. And as we grew a little bit closer, I kind of let him know about that and make fun of him.
Well, to be fair, he is an Irishman, so I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Daniel, how would you describe your role with Orlando City under James O'Connor? Are there certain aspects of the team that are under your purview? Where is your authority in terms of the coaching duties?
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the reasons James picked me several years ago is because I have a different personality and different skill set than James. James is very straight. He's very detail oriented. He's very direct in his delivery, in his communication. I'm pretty relational and laid back. I also have a background in leadership as well. I think a lot of my messaging, the way that I deliver messages to the group, he will rely on me for that. Also, building culture was a big thing that was attractive to James. Setting the standard for just how we operate, how we do things on a daily basis is a big part of my job. I give a lot of feedback to James on sort of how we should approach building relationships with the players, and he leans heavily on me for that, along with, you know, planning sessions and you know, deciding who to play and what tactics we should use. You know.
Well, obviously there were some challenges when you guys arrived. You know, the team won a pretty bad losing streak. What type of messaging and culture shifting have you been communicating to the players?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one of the first things we said to the players is, you know, we're under no illusions, you know, of where we're at. We said to the players that we're very conscious that we're going to have to fight our way out of this. There's no magic wand fix to this. There's going to be a very intentional step-by-step, sort of day-by-day, game-by-game process that we're going to have to undergo to dig ourselves out of this. It's, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, commitment and buy-in. We've gone through the change process, what it's going to take to change, how people react to change. We've talked a lot about also the culture that's needed, the leadership that's also needed from the players to spearhead that change. You know, we've talked about how you know, exactly and very specifically how we're going to do it together, you know, not only from ourselves, you know, but also from every member of the staff and each and every player. It's very much a collective process. So those are some of the things that we talked about right when we first got here.
So you've been here just over a week now, and got your first look at your team there on Saturday night out in LA, and I'm curious as to whether you thought that the team was about what you thought you'd see. Was it maybe a step ahead, a step behind, or where you might have thought that they would, they would look in that particular first game?
There weren't really any surprises. I think that the fact that we conceded first, the team has been doing that regularly, unfortunately, over the last several games. So that happened. We also were not surprised when we started to fight our way back as well, because we were very capable of not only staying in games but scoring goals and changing momentum, which we did. So as far as being surprised or not being caught off guard by anything, no, not really. It was pretty much what we expected. What we were caught off guard by was there were some game-changing calls in there, and we would have hoped that we would have had a better reaction from those calls, because we spoke a lot about overcoming adversity, and unfortunately, our reaction to what happened in the game needed to be better. But had those things not happened, we at the time that the goal was disallowed, it would have gone 2-2, and we fully felt like, we could have gone on and got something from the game, if not won the game.
You're not going to get any argument from us on that. It's a lot of what we talked about, but, coming in, James played with Dom, he knows him very well. Dom has come out and, in support of him. I'm curious, though, of what other players have impressed you since you've gotten here, who seems to be either buying into, the new culture, the new system, and, who's standing out for you?
Yeah, well, when there's a new boss in town, normally everybody's on their best behavior, right? So I think credit to all the players. I think the commitment every day in training has been really high. We've been really pleased with that. As far as individual players standing out, really, I couldn't pick one or two and say, look, this guy has really been head and shoulders above the rest, because one of the things that we said to the players when we came in is that, this is a clean slate. Everybody has an opportunity to prove themselves. Everybody has an opportunity to impress us and to fight for their slot. So, every day in training has been just that. It's been, people pushing themselves and pushing each other and fighting for spots. So, I couldn't really pick one or two. It's been an absolute dogfight since we got here.
Daniel, I want to go back to you talked about the adversity after the calls, and I'm curious, because I've never really asked this question before, but how does the explanation of that kind of thing get relayed to the bench? Does the fourth official say something? Do you even get any kind of an explanation when something happens, like Dwyer's goal gets pulled back after what seemed like a lengthy review, and then that you had the one cross the goal line on the other end that didn't seemingly get any review? Does anything get relayed to you on the sidelines?
Yeah, I can only speak for myself. It was pretty chaotic in the moment. The goal goes in, we're pretty excited, we're all celebrating, and it seemed like, maybe even a minute after that, all of a sudden, then there's, it's been pulled back. So, yeah, you're questioning the fourth official, and the only thing that I recall him saying was that it went upstairs for the video review, and the VAR upstairs had ruled it offside. So, we were asking, why didn't the ref check it, on the field level? And he said that it didn't, for for offsides that it didn't have to, the center didn't have to check it. So he just, he took the VAR upstairs in the booth with his word for it. And you know, he disallowed the goal. So obviously very disappointed, because, you know, when we saw it after the game, it definitely didn't look like, as per the rule states, it definitely didn't seem like it was clear and obvious. So, for us, that was very disappointing.
Yeah, disappointing for the rest of us. So Toronto's up next. Obviously, you guys now have another whole week, and I say that kind of jokingly. You know, you had a good 5 days, now you've got another whole week. But what is it that y'all are focusing on to get ready for that next game in an effort to, you know, to stem this this losing tide?
Yeah, individual roles and responsibilities. We're trying to implement our style of play and making sure everyone's on the same page and on the same page, especially, well, in the last couple of, well, today, for example, we're working on, you know, attacking movements, and we'll, as we do every week, we'll work on defensive principles, we'll work on attacking principles, and making sure that everybody understands their roles and responsibilities, and that we're all synced up, and everyone's, you know, doing what we ask of them. You know, the last thing that we want is for guys to go out there, you know, doing their own individual thing, and people not being able to work together. And you know, we did the process was the same last week. You know, different opponent. We'll break down the opponent and look and see where we can expose them and how we want to attack them. Also, how we need to defend against them. And that's what we're doing this week as well.
All right, Daniel, before we let you go, just wanted to just get your take on, you know, Jonathan Spector, you know, getting injured really was a key moment in the game. It seemed like it took the defense a few minutes to adjust after Chris Schuler went in and you know, in that brief spell, of course, conceded the goal. But it did look like the team had made some progress in terms of it did concede first, but there was no early goal. Like we've seen so many early goals during this streak against, and LAFC is a team that scores early quite often, and especially at home. So it was good to see the team withstand that early surge from LAFC. And then we saw a little bit more success in the transition game than what we've seen previously this year. How close do you think this team is from really turning that corner?
Yeah, no, I think we're fully expecting to turn the corner on Saturday. And again, you know, I think, you know, had things gone a little bit differently, I really believe that, you know, we could have and should have gotten something out of the game against LA. Yeah, Specs is leader, so obviously that was a blow when he had to come out early. But at the same time, I think Schuler did come on and he did a good job. You know, as regards, you know, the goal that we conceded first, I think, you know, there's some aspects of that, some things that we spoke about that we need to do way better. And we've addressed those and hopefully we'll deal with those better, you know, on Saturday. And again, as far as, you know, conceding goals, it's something that we've been speaking about every day. We're not going to, there just needs to be a bit of a shift in terms of acceptance. You know, there's some details that we can't allow and we can't accept. And we need to, as you say, turn the corner. And I think that we're very, very close to doing that. And we're working on that this week. And hopefully we'll see the change on Saturday.
Great. Oh, well, final question. Shane O'Neill now available for selection. Is he a guy that's in game shape, or is it going to be a few games maybe before we see him?
Yeah, no. Shane's been training well, and you know, we're monitoring him closely, and him along with the other players, and he's in contention, and we're monitoring him on a day to day basis.
All right, Daniel Bird, assistant coach for Orlando City SC. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, and welcome back to Orlando.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, we are now into stoppage time in episode number 133 of the Mainland Podcast. Big thanks to assistant coach Daniel Bird and to Lucas Casas.
Casas?
I'm not sure which the accent is on with Lucas. It looks like Casas, like houses, and like houses in Spanish. But anyway,
I think Lucas, you're putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yes, I do that frequently. So it could be Casas or it could be Casas, or it could be something completely different, like Smith, and I wouldn't even know the difference. But thank you, Lucas, for setting that up. I'm sure Lucas is getting a big kick out of this because Lucas listens to our podcast. Did you know that?
Of course. Yeah, of course he does.
Anyway. Let's get on with our Mainland Mailbag. Ask the Mainland Podcast anything, and to ask us anything, there's two ways to do it. There's probably a lot of ways you could really do it if you really wanted to, but there's two ways that we actually will actually check and look and see it.
Correct.
And one of those is on Twitter. We are at the Mainland, and you can write to us at the Mainland, at us, and use the hashtag AskTMLPC. Hey, I want to apologize if I'm not seeing your questions. If you've ever used the Christ Out hashtag at us, you probably got muted. So that might be why we're not seeing them. Because there was a time when that was just too damn annoying, and I wasn't putting up with it, so I just muted it. And I don't even know – you can actually email us is the other way you could do it. And if you think you're not getting on because you added us with Christ Out, you can email us at themainland@gmail.com, and you can ask your question, and you can ask to be unmuted because that way we'll see your stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So apologies. If you're not seeing it and you used to be a big Christ Out proponent, you probably got muted at some point because it just the app mentions were just out of control. Anyway, also, sidebar. Got to block an Atlanta fan this week.
That makes for it's a good week.
Yeah, I mean Atlanta fans like to if you're gonna at my blog and bash me and you're an Atlanta fan, you don't need to see my tweets. That's the way I figure it. But that somebody took an exception to the tweet about James O'Connor having to deal with the call to remove the goal that Dom Dwyer scored quite legitimately on Saturday. And and I said something about, it could cost the team points. Keep in mind, at that point, it was 2-1 and it should have been 2-2 with 18 minutes to play. And this Yahoo writes back that, they gave up four goals. So how did that even affect the outcome? And we're just a bunch of whiny, pathetic Orlando fans. It's like, okay. I guess that goals don't change games is the lesson I'm supposed to take from this. I guess maybe the pressure would not have shifted back onto LAFC if they had blown a two-goal lead at home late in the game.
I think you're giving him too much credit that he knew that he looked at the timestamp and knew that it was when, not that you said that at the end of the game. So I think you're giving him way too much credit.
Well, then I will. You know, I was in error because I should never give Atlanta fans credit for anything.
Exactly my point.
I mean, just because they invented MLS doesn't mean that I should give them the time of day. But anyway, I'm getting way in the weeds. Let's get to our mailbag. Again, AskTMLPC is the hashtag. Use it to us at the Mainland on Twitter or email us themainland@gmail.com. Let's start in the mailbox. David Victor has sent us an email. And he says, hey, hello, Michael and Dave. Jesse Marsh left New York Red Bulls to become an assistant for Red Bull Leipzig. One, would Marsh have had a similar opportunity come if he had stayed as head coach for the Red Bulls? Two, is this the foot in the door he needed to eventually become a head coach manager at a premier European League team? Three, is being an assistant in the Bundesliga that much of a step up from being a head coach in MLS? Well, David, I'm appreciative of your questions, and I think the main thing is this. I think Leipzig would like to have Jesse Marsh take over that particular club, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Jesse Marsh is still working on his coaching certificate at whatever level it is needed to become a coach in that league. I believe that's correct. Either way, either if he hasn't yet achieved that certificate, that coaching level certificate, or if they're grooming him to bring him in as an assistant to groom him for that head coaching job. I think the timing was important to Leipzig. I don't think that Marsh would have stepped down from Red Bulls without it being important for Leipzig, and they needed to get their coaching staff in place. So I think that he would not have had a – I mean, would he have had a similar opportunity if he'd have stayed with the Red Bulls? Yes, maybe, but not probably not within the Red Bull organization, which he, I think, is a company man at this point, it seems like. And this is his best opportunity, I think. And Leipzig's a pretty decent team and an exciting program, and I think that it's probably a pretty attractive job as far as Bundesliga jobs. Is being an assistant in Bundesliga that much of a step up from being a head coach in MLS? I don't know what they pay their assistants, so I can't answer that. But I do think this is a good opportunity for Jesse to eventually get that, as you mentioned, foot in the door. And I think that he felt like he had to take it. That's my take. Dave, do you have anything else you want to add on top of that?
All I was going to say is that it was obviously an internal discussion where, he knows where he wants to be. They said, this is how you can get there. And he said, okay. And then as far as whether it's a better job than MLS, I don't think that's it's not a fair comparison in this situation because, once again, we're talking internal, communications within the organization. So it was just, he's going to go over there, do what he needs to do versus, like if somebody was to go from, Los Angeles to, Bayern Munich, we're talking about completely different, animal than what we were talking about here.
Yeah. So it was curious. Everybody thought he was leaving to become the head coach in Leipzig. And I think I don't know for a fact. I've just heard this and I've read this and people have pontificated that his license, coaching license, is not high enough level yet. He is working on the highest level currently. And so I don't know if that was a job requirement, then that could have held him back potentially. But he's in their plans. It's pretty obvious. So thank you again to David Victor, and that's all the email that we have this week, and we can turn our attention to Twitter. Okay, so the Twitter questions that we have, I know we have a couple. By the way, I have confirmation. Just during this show, it's Lucas Casas.
Casas,
yes. So we have a question from Ryan Smith, who is a friend of the pod, a self-proclaimed friend of the pod. He says, Dave, you, David Rowe, are the new manager of the Orlando City player band. Pick 5 players, assign them instruments, a musical genre, and most importantly, what is the name of the band?
The name of the band? Oh, okay. Wow. All right, so I'm going to go rock genre because I'm a classic rock guy. Which means that I'm going to have lead vocals, obviously. For that, I'm going to go with Dom because, let's face it, he's a face guy. He's got the whole, beard thing going on and all that, or the scruffiness. Then you've got your guitar guy. For guitar, I'm actually going to go with El Monier, just because it sounds like you could do some really cool thing with a guitar and having the El Monier and it labeled on the car or something like that. Bass, you got to go Bendick. Got to go Joe Bendick on bass because he's hardcore. And then you've got your drummer. Drummer's going to have to be Yuri Rizel because, Yuri's got that the whole redhead goatee thing going on. And then I'm going to take a left turn and go with a rock flute. And that's going to be Sasha Kljestan, just because you can see him kind of, a little bit, standing on one leg with the other one up a little bit. So rock flute. Now, as for what they're called, I'd say White Lion, but that's been taken for those of you who are old enough to remember that 80s rock band that had the song Wait. Instead, I'm going to go with Pride's Folly.
Okay. This is a great question, by the way. This is the kind
of
question.
It's a lot of fun.
The kind
of
question that we live for.
It does.
I agree with you. The vocalist is Dom Dwyer. He's got the presence. You got to have the good looks, the stage presence. I think that's Dom in a nutshell, really. I am going to go on bass. I'm going to go Sasha Kleshin because he looks like a bass player, kind of big and gangly, tall and gangly, like a lot of bass players are.
Okay.
I'm going to move Bendik to the drums. He could beat on the drums. I think that Bendik would be the drummer of the group. He seems like that type. Guitar. I think for guitar, you need somebody with some flash. And I think that kind of describes Yoshimar Yotun.
That was my second choice.
Plus, he has the word tune right in his name.
Oh, dang it.
So that ties in nicely. So he's your guitarist. And I'm gonna throw a keyboard player in here, and I don't really know why he strikes me as a keyboard player, maybe because keyboard players sometimes are kind of nerdy, and this guy's kind of nerdy but in a good way, and that's Jonathan Spector. So I think Specs is on the keys, and there's your band, and I'm gonna say they play progressive rock because it's the greatest genre there is,
prog rock,
and the name of the band. I just had it and it kind of slipped away. But
I was gonna say, if it's prog rock, it can't have anything to do with what it's talking about.
Yeah, I think I would name it something like it's got to have a kind of a weird name, maybe Purple City.
All right. I like the purple.
Ties into the team. It's kind of nonsensical. It's perfect. Yeah. Perfect prog rock name.
I like it.
All right. Thank you so much, Ryan Smith, friend of the pod, for that question. You actually are a friend of the pod and not just a self-proclaimed friend of the pod.
Yes, that was an excellent question. Definitely friend of the pod worthy.
We have a question from Spot, who says, I know this Owen Goal fella is having a great World Cup, but do you think there's any chance Orlando City can add him during the July window? Think he could solve our scoring woes? Well, Owen Goal already plays for Orlando City.
Unfortunately, he does. Yeah,
and it's he's a little bit wrong-headed and puts the ball in the wrong net, and we've seen that a couple of times in the recent games against Montreal, because you got to have the degree of difficulty when playing the Canadiens, and so you want to give them spot them a goal. Not no pun intended for your Twitter name being Spot. But yeah, I think it would be nice if other teams could maybe work a transfer and get Owen Goal on their team.
Or better yet, what we could do is we could loan out Owen Goal to the opposing team every week.
Yeah.
I think that might work out better. Yeah. And Spot, I mean, friend of the podcast. I mean, come on, you've asked a bunch of questions week in, week out. So you didn't call it. I'm calling a friend of the podcast.
All right. And not that any of these were Ask the Mainland Podcast questions, but to all of the people who thought that Ali Krieger getting a 6.5 in our player grades for the Spirit game was too low, get a life, people. It's one person's opinion. And by the way, only four players on the team had a worse passing percentage. She missed a goal from about 8 yards away with an empty net. And she had a mistake that really almost led to a Spirit goal. So a 6.5, maybe, in my opinion. I didn't do the piece. It was Jack. Jack McAwesome does our pride grades, and thanks to him for doing those. I probably wouldn't have even given her the 0.5. I probably would have just given her the 6. Did she do some good things in the game? Yes. Was she great? No. She was average in this game, and I think if you asked her, she would tell you that.
Well, and it's not that we don't have any love for Ellie. I mean, obviously, we think the world of her, but
she's been on this very podcast.
Yes, she has. Exactly. So it's, don't think of it that way. It's just we try to do an honest assessment. And not only that, but different people do the grades all the time. So it's it's not like there's a standard that Michael has set for how grades go. If you've read, you know that.
Jack is his own man when it comes to Pride grades. He's pretty much
exactly.
He's pretty much done all the grades for the Pride this year, and he does a good job with it. I think he's pretty fair. I think that he doesn't pull punches. When he thinks somebody doesn't have a good game, he'll tell you. When he thinks somebody's having a good game, he'll tell you that too. And I think some people were like, oh, Allie Krieger's at least been a 7.5. And I'm thinking, based on some of the other scores there, I don't think she played better than some of those other 7s and 7.5s. So, and then
I mean, I'll give her a 7 on her, you know, commentating that when she's on TV.
Ah, she's good at that. Yeah.
Yeah, she's good at that. Yeah, absolutely.
So don't, you know, don't let it ruin your week that you think that she got rank higher than what we gave her. Okay. That's all I'm saying. Grades are subjective. And, if you are, you know, a big fan of a particular player, you're probably willing to overlook some of the mistakes that they make. That's all. Anyway, thanks to everybody who sent in questions. Oh, wait, you have a question. You have a question.
I do. Actually, I've got two.
You have two
so
questions. So we're not done yet.
No, we're not done
right,
yet.
Let's continue.
We're getting more popular with this. Right. It's getting longer every week. All right. So this comes from Cameron Hughes on Twitter. What other painful things in life would you compare to watching Orlando City attempt short corner kicks?
Well, Dave, I've given this some thought, and I have passed a kidney stone before.
Ooh, okay.
And it's kind of like that. It's every time I see Sasha or Yoshi just poke the ball about 8 yards in front of them to somebody else, it's like reliving the kidney stone incident all over again. It is not good. I don't know what they're seeing. They must be doing these amazing things in training with short corners.
Of course.
Because they are not good at short corners. None of them come off. They're almost spectacularly bad when they try them. I get that you don't want to necessarily plunk a ball into the middle of the box with a Laurent Simon and a Walker Zimmerman in there. It's a low percentage play. But at least it's probably not a prelude to a 4-on-3 break the other way.
Okay. I have heel spurs and plantar fasciitis, and while not as painful in the extreme as what you mentioned, it is a daily thing. And so this thing about short corners reminds me of it because it happens way too often. Mm-hmm. And every time I stand up and try to walk someplace, I have to be like, ow, 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 ow. And that's kind of how I feel about it every time that they do a short corner. I'm like, ow, 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 stop, ow. So yes. I'm gonna compare it to that.
All right. Well, that's fair because I also have suffered from plantar fasciitis in the past, so it's no fun.
And it's no fun. Lastly, absent friend of the podcast, Mark Johnson, wants to know, with France winning today, and he knows that we have, as we're recording the podcast, that we still have to watch the England-Croatia game. Who do you think wins England-Croatia, and ultimately, who wins World Cup?
I think England probably wins because we can't have nice things. If we could have nice things, Belgium would have beat France. I wanted somebody new to win guaranteed, and we're not going to get that guarantee now. So it's
no,
probably going to be England. Croatia's played, I think, two extra time games in a row, and it doesn't look like Mandzukic is 100% healthy. It looks like he's been playing hurt. And he's really their big threat. And Rakitic hasn't really been as good the last two games as he was earlier in the tournament. So I think England wins it. Who wins the whole thing? It's really hard to pick against France the way they played today. Their defense looks pretty solid, and they really create a lot. They're terrifying on the counter. So maybe France, but since if France plays England, I would probably want France to win. England would probably win the whole thing.
I'm going to agree with you that England gets by Croatia. I think that those guys are on a mission. And of course, like you said, Croatia has played a lot more extra minutes than England has. In the final, I'm going to agree. I think England wins, which since I think that means France will win. So there you have it, podcast listeners.
One of us will be wrong.
One of us is going to be wrong, which is better than usual because usually we're both wrong. but I don't know. It kind of reminds me of that German team in the past that kind of just, you know, took the tournament by storm and won the whole thing. And I kind of feel that way about England. So I don't know. That's it's more gut feeling than anything else. So I'm gonna go with England.
Well, as a United fan, I have to say it's shocking to see a team be this successful with Jesse Lingard and Ashley Young playing.
Right. Well, as a Liverpool fan, I hate rooting for Harry Kane and seeing Sterling do anything good. Well, which, to be fair, he really hasn't. So.
Yeah, and quite frankly, if we're being honest, England should be punished for the "it's coming home" bullcrap.
Okay, that's fair.
You know, they really should be punished for that. So, you know, if they lose the final, if they lose the final in penalties, which would be the most painful way for them to lose, it would probably be worth it to pay them back for "it's coming home."
As Americans, I don't think we get to tell anybody that they're being too patriotic about anything.
It's not really about the patriotism aspect so much as it's A, it's pompous, and B, the song is just terrible.
Okay, I'll give you the song is terrible. And yeah, it's pompous, but they are British.
Yeah, but isn't that more of a French thing? Typically?
Good point.
I don't know.
Yeah, good point.
I don't know. Anyway, thanks to everyone who sent in questions, and you can do that again. Email us, themainland@gmail.com, or do it on Twitter. @themainland is our Twitter handle, and tweet us with the hashtag AskTMLPC. Dave, we will turn our attention now to the to Toronto FC, and Orlando City will once again try to do this thing it used to be able to do called winning a game, and Toronto doesn't seem to be the opponent to do that against. Based on history, the history of the series, Orlando City has one victory, I believe, in the series. It did come in Orlando, but not in Orlando City Stadium. And that was that wild, crazy game with the 100th minute penalty that Kaká scored.
Ah, yes.
So it was some extenuating circumstances to get that first win. But I got to have your key matchups, and I need your score prediction.
From what I understand, Toronto has somebody named Giovinco and another guy named Altidor. I'll have to check the spelling of both of those. anyway, it's going to be the defensive back line against Toronto's attack. I mean, you know, they can score. We're without most likely Specs, most likely Sutter, most likely Sané. And, you know, this is nothing against the guys who are going to be there, but we've conceded first going back, I don't know how many games. So that worries me. So what we can do to stop their attack is that's going to be huge for me. Despite what our guest said about turning a corner, unfortunately, I don't think it's this week. I'm going with another loss on the books. People 2-1 at home, but we do get a goal. So, I mean, there's that.
The old moral victory. I'm going to go the other way and say that the key matchup to me is the Orlando City attack against Toronto FC, which has a very underrated defense and a good goalkeeper. I think that Orlando City needs to get the first goal, get some positive momentum, get some confidence in the game. It's imperative to score the first goal. The way that happens is the Dwyers and the Kleshtons and the Colemans and the Muellers and the Mirams, they have to win those early battles and create good scoring chances, and then they have to finish those chances. Because, you know, if you look back to Saturday's game, when it was 1-0, Kleshton got Dwyer in behind, and Dwyer didn't get the shot into the net. He had it stopped by Tyler Miller. It was a good save. Maybe Dom could have done better to chip him a little bit, maybe from there. But Miller did a good job of coming out and making himself big and making the stop. But if Dwyer scores there, it's 1-1. You don't go right. You don't go down 2-0, and it's the uphill climb is not as steep. And already before halftime, you've already completed the uphill climb to get level again. So it's really imperative to finish the chances. We've been talking about this since the start of this losing streak. The team starts scoring goals, they'll gain the confidence. And that's what they need to do. Score the goal, score it early, score it first. And I'm putting that on the offense against Toronto's defense. A very talented and underrated back line and a very good goalkeeper. So that's my key matchup. Unfortunately, I don't think we're done yet with the losing. Toronto has always had Orlando's number, And I like your score line of 2-1. I think it's going to be a cagey affair, a low-scoring affair, and I think just Toronto has just – I mean, Giovinco kills this team. Set pieces and drawing penalties and all those things. He'll figure out a way to get his team an extra goal.
Well, folks, this is either really good news or really bad news because we both predicted a 2-1 loss, which means it won't be a 2-1 loss. So it's either going to be a draw or it's going to be worse or maybe even a win. But we know it won't be a 2-1 loss.
That's probably safe. That's probably safe. So anyway, that was, again, just another case of I can't pick them to win till they win. Show me they're capable. And
sure.
You know, I don't think that this is the opponent that sets up for that. So anyway, we will be back next week to talk about Orlando City at or versus Toronto at the Orlando City Stadium. We will talk about a pair of Pride games, the Pride at Houston and also at Utah for the final meetings of the season with both of those teams. And, you know, we'll look ahead to the next week, which, you know, more teams to play. You'll have U.S. Open Cup coming up again. So lots and lots of stuff to discuss. We'll get into game two of the James O'Connor era and see if the new gaffer can get the team in the win column. If you want, you can always read our stuff at themainland.com. We really appreciate it. Leave comments there. You know, join our community. That's what it's there for. You can converse with our writers and with other readers of the site, other Orlando City fans. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, all that fun stuff, and we would appreciate that. And of course, as always, we would really like it if you would subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, and leave us a 5-star review. We will read the review you write. We will do it on air.
We'll read it twice if you do it.
Well, come on, we don't want to overkill.
Okay. Well, we'll read it once anyway.
Yeah, we'll at least read it once. So, yeah, that's it. That's going to do it for episode 133 of the Mainland Podcast. We want to thank again our special guest, assistant coach Daniel Bird. Thanks again to Lucas Casas for setting up that interview. And we'll be back to do it all again next week. So on behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying go City and go Pride.